Good evening. I was going to suggest that we start thinking about something else to read, thinking that we were nearly finished with this book. And then I realized that there's a whole nother section, which is the next section, called Right Understanding. And there are 12 chapters in it. So we've got a ways to go yet. I was very surprised. Oh, there's more. So, I guess we can just continue. Though in the back of your mind you might begin to feel around for, because we will switch when we're finished to some new thing. So there may be something you'll want to go into it in some depth. When we've come to this end of Suzuki Roshi, though, I think we go back over and over to this book. I don't know how many times I've been through it. So this is a longish chapter as these chapters go, so maybe we should just start reading. page 99. 99.
One after the waterfall.
Traditional Zen spirit.
If you are trying to attain enlightenment, you are creating and being driven by karma. You are wasting your time on your black cushion. The most important things in our practice are our physical posture and our way of breathing. We are not so concerned about a deep understanding of Buddhism. As a philosophy, Buddhism is very deep, wide, and firm system of thought, but Zen is not concerned about philosophical understanding. We emphasize practice. We should understand why our physical posture and breathing exercise are so important. Instead of having a deep understanding of the teaching, we need a strong confidence in our teaching, which says that originally we have Buddha nature. Our practice is based on this faith.
Before Bodhidharma went to China, almost all the well-known stock words of Zen were in use. For instance, there was the term Sun Enlightenment. Sun Enlightenment is not an adequate translation, but tentatively I will use the expression. Enlightenment comes all of a sudden to us. This is true enlightenment. Before Bodhidharma, people thought that after a long preparation, sudden enlightenment would come. Thus, Zen practice was a kind of training to gain enlightenment. Actually, many people today are practicing Zazen with this idea, but this is not the traditional understanding of Zen. The understanding passed down from Buddha to our time is that when you start Zazen, there is enlightenment, even without any preparation. Whether you practice Zazen or not, you have Buddha nature. Because you have it, there is enlightenment in your practice. The points we emphasize are not the stage we attain, but the strong confidence we have in our original nature and the sincerity of our practice. We should practice Zen with the same sincerity as Buddha. If originally we have Buddha nature, the reason we practice our Zen is that we must behave like Buddha. To transmit our way is to transmit our spirit from Buddha. So we have to harmonize our spirit, our physical posture, and our activity with the traditional way. You may attain some particular stage, of course, but the spirit of your practice should not be based on an egotistic idea.
According to the traditional Buddhist understanding, our human nature is without ego. When we have no idea of ego, we have Buddhist view of life. Our egoistic ideas are delusion, covering our Buddha nature. We are always creating and following them, and in repeating this process over and over again, our life becomes completely occupied by ego-centered ideas. This is called karmic life or karma. The Buddhist life should not be karmic life. The purpose of our practice is to cut off the karmic spinning mind. If you are trying to attain enlightenment, that is a part of karma. You are creating and being driven by karma, and you are wasting your time on your black cushion. According to Bodhidharma's understanding, practice based on any gaining idea is just a repetition of your karma. Forgetting this point, many later Zen masters have emphasized some stage to be attained by practice.
More important than any stage which you will attain is your sincerity, your right effort. Right effort must be based on a true understanding of our traditional practice. When you understand this point, you will understand how important it is to keep your posture right. When you do not understand this point, the posture and the way of breathing are just a means to attain enlightenment. If this is your attitude, it would be much better to take some drugs instead of sitting in the cross-legged position. If our practice is only a means to attain enlightenment, there is actually no way to attain it. We lose the meaning of the way to the goal. When we believe in our way firmly, we have already attained enlightenment. When you believe in your way, enlightenment is there. But when you cannot believe in the meaning of the practice which you are doing in this moment, you cannot do anything. You are just wandering around the goal with your monkey mind. You are always looking for something without knowing what you are doing. If you want to see something, you should open your eyes. When you do not understand Bodhidharma Zen, you're trying to look at something with your eyes closed. You do not dislike the idea of attaining enlightenment, but the most important thing is this moment, not someday in the future. We have to make our effort in this moment. This is the most important thing for our practice.
Before Bodhidharma, the study of Buddhist teaching resulted in a deep and lofty philosophy of Buddhism. And people try to attain its high ideals. This is a mistake. Bodhidharma discovered that it was a mistake to create some lofty or deep idea and then try to attain it by the practice of Zazen. If that is our Zazen, it is nothing different from our usual activity or monkey mind. It looks like a very good, a very lofty and holy activity. But actually, there is no difference between it and our monkey mind. That is the point that Bodhidharma emphasized.
Before Buddha attained enlightenment, he made all possible efforts for us, and at last he attained a thorough understanding of various ways. You may think Buddha attained some stage where he was free from karmic life, but it is not so. Many stories were told by Buddha about his experiences after he attained enlightenment. He was not at all different from us. When his country was at war with a powerful neighbor, he told his disciples of his own karma, of how he suffered when he saw that his country was going to become conquered by the neighboring king. If he had been someone who had attained an enlightenment in which there was no karma, there would have been no reason for him to suffer so. And even after he attained enlightenment, he continued the same effort we are making. But his view of life was not shaky. His view of life was stable, and he watched everyone's life, including his own life. He watched himself, and he watched others with the same eyes that he had watched stones or plants or anything else. He had a very scientific understanding. That was his way of life after he attained enlightenment.
When we have the traditional spirit to follow the truth as it goes and practice our way without any idealistic idea, then we will attain enlightenment in its true sense. And when we understand this point, we will make our best effort in each moment. That is true understanding of Buddhism. So our understanding of Buddhism is not just an intellectual understanding. Our understanding at the same time is its own expression, is the practice itself. Not by reading or contemplation of philosophy, but only through practice, actual practice, can we understand what Buddhism is. Constantly, we should practice Zazen with strong confidence in our true nature, breaking the chain of karmic activity and finding our place in the world with actual practice.
Very strong. Very strong. On the Koban Sama website, there is an account of someone I didn't know who sat with Koban, who said he always struggled mightily with the actual sitting and breathing part of Zazen, of the physical part, and became very interested in the body, and began to study Feldenkrais and maybe Alexander technique, some of those very subtle studies of how the body is and can be. And he describes a lengthy explanation of how the muscles and the bones and the spinal fluid and the breath coordinate so that it's a flow, a continual flow, a flow of the spinal fluid that goes, you know, through the head, all through the head, and then down through the spine. I can't even begin to describe it. It has drawings of bones and muscle connections. One of the things he says that I could completely understand was that the muscles that come together, many systems of muscles come together right here, about an inch or so below the navel, which is the hara. So he says it makes perfect sense that this is where we rest our hands. Our little fingers, as he says, we rest our little fingers on this place. I encourage you all to take a look at it. It's very interesting. The whole website is very interesting. I've just started a project of writing 35 years of Koban's life in America that will eventually go on there to fill in Vanya's little history. That's why I was looking at it. But what he was emphasizing was exactly what this very first sentence says in here. The most important things in our practice are our physical posture and our way of breathing. And it's emphasized not because it's something right and proper to do, but because this is how our body functions completely and wholly in the best way. That this breathing, sitting and breathing in an upright posture, is what Zazen is. Is what enlightenment is, Dogen said. It doesn't mean that we have to sit on a cushion to be upright. Sometimes we have to be lying flat on our back. I know a number of people who've sat quite long periods on their back with their knees up. I also know somebody who killed himself when he couldn't sit on a cushion anymore. Somebody in Bodhi, in the early years of Bodhi. Very, very tragic. He had a bad back, and the doctor told him he should never sit on a cushion, and he couldn't bear it. It was a huge lesson to all the rest of us. It was way too extreme. The importance is is the position and how we're able to maintain it. But we can maintain it in many, many different ways. I sat for a long time, more than a year, in a chair, and I may end up back in a chair again. So and may some of you may also, and that's fine. But that's the point. That's really the point of our practice. Even though we get very interested, and I do, in a lot of the rest of it, the ideas, Buddha's life and practice, and how he brought the Dharma to us. And the other point in here is how Buddha lived a life. He didn't go off into a cave and live with his head in a cloud somewhere. He was right in the ground and on the ground. He was with everyone. He suffered greatly. He was attacked. He had many doubts. Mara appeared to him over and over in his life. But his intention was so strong. And his ability, his stability to maintain his view in spite of what was happening to him, made him a kind of inspiration for people. Not even a model, really, but for people to find in themselves that same stability. That's what he exemplified. What we call Buddha nature is our own nature. I just read an account of Jan van de Wettering, you know, that Dutch writer. He wrote some wonderful murder mysteries, but he also was a Zen practicer. And he described his first enlightenment when he was a kid playing Monopoly with his older brothers for the first time. They said, "Okay, Jan, you're old enough to play Monopoly now." And he played and played and played, and he saw he was losing. And then he was losing more, and all of his houses were taken away, and he didn't have any money. And finally he saw, "Oh, I've lost. This is terrible. I don't have anything. Nothing is left." And he was just about to start crying in despair when suddenly he saw through the whole thing. He said, "It's just a game. It's just a stupid game." And he was so excited, he knocked over a lamp and the whole tea kettle went over and everybody was mad at him, and he was just laughing his head off all the way up to bed. He said it was the most wonderful experience. So this no ego experience is not some fabulous kind of, I don't know, psychological gesture that happens. It's just seeing through. And it doesn't devastate our life. Nothing is ruined. It's just that what we think is so serious maybe isn't so serious. And maybe some things that we don't take so seriously are more serious than we know. That's why it's so important to really be present with our life and really notice what's going on. To be aware. Being driven by karma, you're wasting your time on your black cushion. I like that very much. Trying to get somewhere. But as he says, as long as we try to get somewhere, we're not getting anywhere. It's very paradoxical. It's very painful for us to try to think this way. But his emphasis here is on our confidence and our trust in ourself, our trust in our practice, our trust in what lives us, what guides us in spite of ourselves a lot of the time. That we can do. So are there comments? Additions, subtractions? Dan?
I think I have a crisis of confidence, self-confidence. Why is it that, and I'll just give an example and you can ask the question. Why is it that with computers, my lack of knowledge about some detail doesn't bother me? I know enough to know that if I don't know something, I can find out. It doesn't bother me. It is like I've gone through enough dead ends and enough work to know that I can know how to find out. That actually, not knowing is not a confidence issue. Just because I don't know one thing doesn't mean I can't find it out. Even things I don't know anything about, I know I can find out. And that persistence to find out is my confidence. But when it comes to me, the confidence doesn't, that process doesn't carry over.
No, because you're not a computer.
Although in this case I was referring to the method, not the topic. Yeah.
Well, but the computer has sort of an endpoint of knowledge about it. We have no endpoint of knowledge. We'll never know even this much of what it is, what our, how we are. That's why it's so important to have a mind that's open and not full of ideas, so that we can be aware of the new information as it comes to us. So it's a completely different mode of mind. How we use our curiosity and, you know, scientific investigation, you could say, is to stay completely open and be completely humble about how much we can even know, because we'll never get to the bottom of it. You know, it's like William James's fish. Told you that story? Yeah. He wanted to study with the great Alvarez, the great teacher at Harvard, back in the 1800s. And the great teacher said, well, I'll test you and see if you're up to it. Do you all know this story?
Yeah.
So he put him in a classroom with a pickled formaldehyde fish. And he said, study this fish and write down everything that you can notice about this fish. And spend the day doing this and then come back to me and I'll see what you've accomplished. So he did that. He studied and studied the fish, everything he could possibly see, the little fins and how everything, measured it all, took it back. And Alvarez said at the end of the afternoon, very good, you did a really good job. Now come back tomorrow. And he said that every single day for a week. Every day he would go and confront the fish and have to find new things to notice about the fish. And every time he did. And at the end of the week, Alvarez said, now I hope you understand, there's no end to the fish. You will never know everything there is to know about the fish. So, it's true of everything. So you don't have to worry about it, but trust is the operative word here. Because we don't know, we trust.
Yeah.
in our own best nature. In Buddha nature, which isn't really our own. It's how we live. It's what lives us.
I'm all the more confident that I have no idea what it is that I'm studying.
That's good.
I mean, this goes back to Dogen, right? The study, the way is the study itself.
Yes.
And yet, well, this chapter just, in your comments, just reaffirmed that I've never understood what Dogen said, and I don't understand what Suzuki Roshi says, and I don't understand what you say. and I don't understand what I'm saying in here.
Yes. Yes.
And any effort to is like the fish. Can go on forever and won't get anywhere really. So what do? We just come back every week and sit here, and when we go to a job, we go to a job and don't wonder what it is that we're studying. We just wake up, brush teeth because we wake up and brush teeth.
Carry water, chop wood. Or carry wood, chop water. Yes. But it has many layers, that yes. So that it's like the difference between hippie Zen and Zen. You know, if we just say, oh well, it's all the same, and we go out and have a party, it's not what Bodhidharma was talking about. Not why Bodhidharma sat in a cave for 9 years. It's about getting familiar, which is what Dogen meant about studying the self. We're not very familiar with ourself. We think we are. We think we know who we are. But we don't really. And so the study of the self isn't the study of what our favorite color is particularly, or what we're good at. Of course, that's part of it. It's our character and our nature. But there's more to it than that. And that's why Zazen brings us back to the cushion, because this is this place to study when we're completely in the present moment and not distracted by anything. So the sound of the cars can just go right through us. Just like that.
Yeah.
It's a lifetime study, really. Connecting, reconnecting, opening up. And we open and close like anemones, too, I think. Yeah. So we just keep coming back. Julian?
So is it part of the process to try to study that, like that fish? Is that activity part of it? The study?
Well, in the sense that we attend to what happens to us as we sit. It's that kind of study that Dogen was talking about the study. As we are as Zazen.
I guess saying that I'll never know that fish is a lot different than actually going to a book and writing, trying to notice all the things. Is there anything that makes sense? It's almost like the rock of Sisyphus or something.
It is.
That's the only way you could see the depth. is by constantly almost failing in that way.
Well, is it a failure?
Well, in the sense you ultimately realize that, you know, the depth, that after,
yes,
after
yes,
a while,
I
it's
see.
Kind of freeing in a way.
Yes. It is freeing. It's freedom. I mean, we're educated so, for such a long time, to believe that there's an answer for this, 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 and this. And that everybody knows everything, and all we have to do is just find it out, or somebody will tell us, or we'll read it in a book, and then we'll know. Like, we'll know everything. But when we begin to become familiar with our own mind, we begin to see how little we know, and how little we'll ever know, and how okay that is, because what begins to open up for us is so much more than all of that. Now, the intellect is a wonderful thing, but it's very narrow. And all that we can know in the intellect is useful and interesting, but there's a whole other aspect to the mind that we seldom connect with. So when we sit, we let the intellect rest. It keeps running on. It's very good at that. But we don't have to follow it. We don't have to pursue it. We just let it be what it wants to be. And begin to open up to the rest.